They're small, stealthy creatures that creep up on you in the night and feed on your blood. Bedbugs are making a big comeback here and all around the world, so we decided to talk about why that is and what can be done about them on today's Please Explain. And joining me now are Dr. Richard Pollack, an entomologist and research associate with the Department of Immunology and Infectious Diseases at the Harvard School of Public Health, and Richard Cooper, also an entomologist and the technical director of Cooper Pest Control Solutions, a New Jersey company that his father founded in 1955. Welcome to the show. And Richard Pollack, for those who have not yet encountered them, what kind of a bug is a bed bug?
Well, hi, Leonard. A bed bug is something that most people won't see, even if they have them, and would certainly prefer not to see. They are true bugs, something, a technicality that is really something only entomologists would care about.
I mean, unlike spiders.
Well, spiders are not insects, but of all the insects out there, entomologists have particular names for these things and classify them. There's something called the true bugs, most of which are plant-feeding insects, some of the things that people are aware of in their gardens. A few of those take blood instead of plant juices, and bed bugs happen to be one of those.
And they're nesting parasites? What does that mean?
Well, they're nest-associated parasites. Bed bugs and their close relatives, there are other species that are almost indistinguishable from bed bugs that feed on birds and bats and yet other kinds of animals, they all pretty much have a certain behavior in common, and that is that they hang out in the nest or around the nest of their host.
Are our beds nests, or is it our house that's the nest?
Well, essentially, our homes, our bedrooms, are essentially glorified nests.
And when we read about bed bugs in the Bible, are we reading about the same bugs that are coming into our beds?
Well, actually, in preparation for this, I did a little bit more research. Apparently, they were not actually mentioned in the Bible, but they were in the Talmud. Not that it really makes much difference, but they've been around, they've been talked about since several hundred years B.C. Several of the early Greek scholars wrote about these things.
Rick Cooper, they're sneaky, secretive creatures, aren't they? They only come out at night?
Yes, that's true. They're largely a nocturnal insect. That's not to say that they can't be seen during the day, but they're primarily going to be active during the nighttime hours.
So does that make them harder to spot?
It's not just the fact that they're nocturnal in nature, but they tend to nest in areas that are completely undisrupted. So where their harborages are going to be are places that people are unlikely to find them. It's not until populations are quite large that they reach the area like the mattress.
I understand that you've brought a jar to show me, a jar of bed bugs?
Sure, I do have some if you'd be interested in seeing them.
Well, I'd be really interested in seeing them, although I'm not sure I'd be interested in seeing them in my home. But can you describe them while I look at them?
Sure, let me get them for you. They vary in size, and what I have...
You say they vary in size. They get pretty big, don't they?
Yes, the container that I just passed you is a magnifier container, and that has first instar, first stage nymphs. Those are only about a millimeter in size. They're pale in color. So unless they were against a very dark surface and you have very keen eyesight, they would go virtually undetected.
It doesn't look like a bug. It just looks like a speck of dirt, in fact.
Right, exactly. And then as they get larger, they go through various developmental stages.
Yeah,
and the container that I just passed you has the adults.
Game.
Now, they're obviously quite large, just under a quarter of an inch. They're a very flat insect. When they're adults, they start out as that translucent 1 millimeter insect that I showed you in the first stage, and they gradually get larger and tanner, and then the adult is like a mahogany brown. But they're flat, and they can get in. That bug can squeeze into a crevice that you could barely slide a piece of paper into.
And since they are, you don't see a lot of legs, they'd probably be hard to spot as bugs at first glance as well.
Yeah, and again, chances are you won't see these until they become well established. Most of these infestations go 3 or 4 months or longer before people ever realize that the bugs are present.
They don't have wings.
No, they're wingless. They crawl, but they are rather swift moving once they start to become active.
Richard Pollack, I understand that most people don't even realize that they've been bitten until they begin waking up with welts on their bodies.
That's true. And even that's a complex issue because many people who do suffer some sort of irritation often don't understand what it is that's causing that problem. There are many sorts of insects and mites which can and do bite people. Bed bugs are only one of a fairly, well, it's not a long list of potential creatures. In order to figure out what it is, ideally you've got to find one of these things. And once you've got a bed bug and confirmed its identity, then you go to the next step as to how best to manage it. But
What do the bites look like?
Excuse me?
What do the bites look like?
Well, that's complex as well because it's different in each different person. The manifestation, just like a mosquito bite, some people react more than others. And even within a single individual, a single person, the way you react today may be different than how you would react to a bite a month or 2 months from now. So that changes as your allergic response changes through time. It's difficult for anybody to look at a bite and proclaim who the villain was.
Although they often appear in a line, don't they?
Well, it's often said that's the case, and no doubt it does happen that way sometimes, but in many cases, and several that I've seen firsthand, they're not more than two in a row.
And they're thought to not to be disease carriers, but how can that be if they feed on blood and move from human to human or human to animal as they feed?
Well, a bed bug that feeds on a infected person, let's say you've got a person with hepatitis B or HIV or who knows whatever else, that bug can indeed ingest, that is, drink along with the blood, any of the pathogens that may be within that blood. So the bug is carrying the infection, but it's never going to get out in the case of bed bugs. There's absolutely no objective evidence that a bed bug can transmit any of these agents. So
does that mean that in some ways they're not really a public health problem?
Well, not in the same way that a mosquito would be a public health problem when you think about malaria or West Nile virus. Those are cases where not only do you have a nuisance, but you have the potential for actually transmitting a disease-causing organism. In the case of bed bugs, it's mainly a nuisance. There's that direct damage from the bugs themselves. There is a public health burden to this also, and that is that many people, whether or not they really truly have bed bugs or just think that they do, will go and attempt to apply insecticides in their homes and on their beds and so forth. And many people don't do this properly. They don't know what they're doing. They don't read the labels. And they can actually get themselves in trouble. Besides wasting money, they can be overexposing themselves to something that, if used properly, would pose minimal, if any, risk. So there's that counterintuitive issue as well.
And that's where someone like Richard Cooper comes in. He is Technical Director of Cooper Pest Solutions of New Jersey. He's here along with Dr. Richard Pollack, an entomologist and research associate with the Department of Immunology and Infectious Diseases at the Harvard School of Public Health. Rick Cooper, what kind of environments do bed bugs thrive in? My sense is that it would be dirty places with a lot of squalor.
Well, and that's traditionally, you know, been the stereotype with bed bugs. Historically, they've been a social stigma. But bed bugs really don't discriminate. They'll survive anywhere where they have a host. So it's really, they're not a product of poor sanitation or poor hygiene. I think what becomes more of an issue is that the bed bugs can be introduced into virtually any environment, from the wealthiest private homes to the best hotels to any situation. It's just that once the bugs are in, the conditions within that environment may be more capable of promoting the activity if there's a lot of clutter and things like that, rather than a sparsely decorated environment.
But they're carried by humans, generally, or by the clothing that we wear. So does that mean I can sit in a movie theater and be infested with a bed bug because somebody before me in that seat had a bed bug in his clothing?
Potentially that could happen.
Oy.
And that was a problem pre-World War II in theaters that were infested, that they would be distributed that way.
Your dad began your family's pest control company in 1955. Were bed bugs a problem back then? I don't remember them being a big problem until recently.
Yeah, they were pretty much on the way out. That was towards the end of the bed bug era. They were, you know, virtually eradicated from the United States through the widespread use of persistent materials like DDT. Then they became resistant to DDT quite widely, and materials like malathion, which was an organophosphate, pretty much finished off the populations. We haven't seen them for about 5 decades.
And partly because we don't use a lot of DDT and malathion nowadays, they're making a comeback?
Well, it goes beyond that. But certainly we don't have those materials today. I think it's interesting. There's really two facets to this problem. There's the question of how did they first get back into the country. It seems like we started to see a resurgence in 1999. But even going back to around 2001, if a company saw one or two jobs a year, that was an awful lot. Today, companies do hundreds to thousands of jobs per year. So we're talking exponential growth in 5 to 6 years. And I think the thing that let the bed bugs into that opened the door into the United States had to do with changing pest management practices. And it's not just the U.S. It's places like the U.K. and places like Australia are paralleling exactly what we're seeing here in the United States. And the big difference here is that pre, say, 1995, maybe even as late as 97, the pest management industry did a lot of calendar scheduled sprays in hotels and apartments. So all the baseboards of hotel rooms and apartment buildings were treated on, say, a monthly basis with chemicals. So I think that perhaps the bed bugs were coming into the United States via international travel. But once the bugs, there's one or two bugs that come in on a suitcase, and once they exited that suitcase, in their effort to try and get to furniture or bedding and so on to become established, they were intercepted by the chemicals and eliminated. Now, around 1995, 1997, in about that time, cockroach baits were widely accepted and became the universal tool for controlling cockroaches. So we no longer did baseboard spraying. That's a good thing. I mean, we don't have persistent chemicals in our hotels and so on. However,
That smell was awful, too.
Well, we got away from the smell problems, but you're right. I mean, at one time, the smell was an issue. But what's happened now is those same couple of bugs come in on a suitcase, and they have free travel within the room, and now they're getting established.
Richard Pollack, how do they find us in the night? Are they attracted to our heat?
Well, they can detect our heat from a short distance away. They might be able to smell us, and they certainly can detect the carbon dioxide and other emanations from our bodies and from the bodies of other animals. They'll feed on things besides people. But if we've brought them in our personal belongings, our suitcase and so forth, and they've infested the area around our beds, then we're a very suitable host that's close by, and that's where they're going to hang out.
Have they been studied seriously by the academic community?
Oh, yeah, they have been, and there's great interest in them once again.
You shook your head no, Richard Cooper. You feel not enough has been done?
Well, certainly not in recent years. Obviously, this insect has been essentially a non-issue for 50-plus years. And certainly no funding. So it really hasn't been looked at in any serious way in our current society. There's just a few entomologists, scarcely few entomologists, that have just started up research programs. There are some research programs. There's Ohio State has had a research program for many years, but not looking at it from an applied point of view. So really all the questions that need to be answered from managing this dispersal and managing the infestations, we know virtually nothing about this insect as it relates to the tools and methods that are available today.
Richard Pollack, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's fine. Richard Cooper's absolutely right. There hasn't been much going on in the way of bedbug research for many decades. There was a lot of work in the early 1900s, classic work that came out in the mid-1900s. So we know, actually, a considerable amount about bedbug biology and ecology, but there's still lots of unanswered questions. And as he pointed out, the best way to manage them using the tools available today, that's something that we're still on a very steep learning curve. But there is, in the last several years, an increasing interest in the academic community towards these bugs. There are some very interesting ecological issues, certainly public health issues. If these bugs did, in fact, transmit any infectious agents, there would be a lot of money available through NIH and other sorts of funding sources. But being that they don't transmit anything...
They're just a nuisance.
Yeah, it's mainly a nuisance issue.
Well, we will come back to what we know so far as to how to get rid of them and take a lot of listener calls at 212-433-9692. As we continue today's Please Explain with Dr. Richard Pollack, an entomologist and research associate with the Department of Immunology and Infectious Diseases at the Harvard School of Public Health. Richard Cooper, also an entomologist and the technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions, of a company in New Jersey. And stay with us for more.
Good night, Mr. Bedbug. Good night. I hope that you sleep tight. I hope that the people don't bite. Good night, Mr. Bedbug, good night. You see, I traveled from town to town before a bedbug could get around. Oh, I wish I had my very own bed, but every night it's someone else's instead. I hope you don't mind if I stay. You know, I've come such a long, long way. I dip in bed most every night. You know, it's hard to find one that feels just right. Good night.
And we're back with Please Explain. My guest, Dr. Richard Pollack, an entomologist and research associate with the Department of Immunology and Infectious Diseases at the Harvard School of Public Health, and Richard Cooper, also an entomologist and the technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions. And we are talking about bedbugs. We have pretty much described them, although not as completely as one might have liked. Richard Cooper, you gave me this this group of bed bugs here in a plastic container, and they look like they were dead, and yet now that I look at the container, it's obvious that they moved. So do they move very slowly, or do they look when I'm not looking? And what would happen if I opened this container? Would they start popping out?
No, if you opened the container, probably nothing would happen. You could probably pull the filter paper out that they're on with a pair of tweezers, and they probably wouldn't move either. They're very, very sedentary. You could call them stick tight, if you will, that they're really not going to drop off, fall off, or even start moving. You'd have to start poking and prodding them to make them become active during the daytime when they're normally inactive.
Before we go to the calls, Richard Pollack, if you see one or many, what's the first thing you should do?
Well, I think the very first thing would be don't panic. And once you get past that point, the second thing, which is really critical to everything that comes next, is to ensure that indeed you're dealing with a bed bug. There, as Richard Cooper will obviously attest to, I'm sure, there are lots of kinds of normal pests that one might find in a home environment. There are carpet beetles, various types. There are moths. There are cockroaches in some houses and apartments.
Mites?
Mites, sure. So just because you're finding a bug, and just because that bug is near or on the bed, doesn't automatically make it a bed bug. Now, if you're experiencing bites as well, that can't be explained otherwise, well, that adds a little more evidence that it might be. But I think it's critical that you try to catch one or collect one and take it to somebody who has entomology training. So someone like Richard Cooper, or for those who don't have any place else to turn, they can send them to us. We have a website. There's a form that people can download and print out, and that can accompany the specimen. We'll tell you whether it's a bed bug or a bat bug or a carpet beetle or whatever else. In many states, the local or the state extension service will provide this service as well. So because it can be difficult and expensive to contract with a service to deal with these things, if you're only dealing with a carpet beetle, then you may have other options which are much less costly and a lot friendlier.
Well,
so it's important to know who your enemy is before you choose the strategy to get rid of them.
And let's take some calls along those lines. Carol from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, can you get bites again a few months later after you've had a professional exterminator get rid of them? And I had them about 6 months ago and got bites every day. Since I've gotten rid of them, I got bites twice, but like 3 months in between. Am I in denial? Do I have them again? Or could it be something else? And if they're really bed bugs, why don't I get bitten every night again?
Richard Cooper?
That's an interesting question and one that we may not have a complete answer for. Clearly, bed bugs can go months without feeding, but in the presence of a blood meal, in other words, a host, you sleeping in your home on a daily basis, you certainly would anticipate if you have a bed bug infestation that one member of the population would be feeding on a daily basis. So to go to get bites tonight and then not get bitten for several months is hard to explain. We certainly know that you can go through a period of pest management practices, believe that the problem is resolved, only to have the problem reoccur a month or two down the road. And then the question is it that the bed bugs were never eliminated in total, or is it that there was somehow a reintroduction?
But these are bugs that produce an awful lot of eggs, don't they? So even if you killed, if they lay 300 eggs and you kill 298, you can still wind up with bed bugs somewhere down the line.
That is correct. And what you would suspect or expect would be that once the problem reemerges or remanifests itself, that it will slowly begin to, gradually build, and then the bites will become more and more frequent. The problem is that, it's very difficult, as Dr. Pollack had mentioned before. You can't look at a bite and give a positive diagnosis. You have to find the bugs. And that brings up the second problem, which is that unless you have a well-established infestation, chances that you'll find those bugs is slim because of their very cryptic and secretive lifestyle.
Sonia, you wanted to add something?
Well, can I add something?
Sure.
Okay. To follow up on that, the experience of continued bites, even after the bed bugs seem to have been eliminated, is indeed a complex problem by itself. Have the bugs simply been the population of bugs been knocked down so far that you're dealing with just a few? That's certainly a possibility. But then there's another well-known phenomenon that happens, and we've seen that recently with actually one of our graduate students here who had been in an infested hotel room, came back and was not exposed to bed bugs, but yet days and even weeks afterwards, new lesions appeared, which are essentially indistinguishable from a bite. And we know that she hasn't been rebitten in the interim. But this is something that's been reported quite a bit. So it's not a question necessarily of still having bugs, although that's an explanation. And then there's this a final category that people will have all sorts of small, unexplainable skin irritations and lesions. And once you've had bed bugs or other kinds of infestations, you might automatically think that, you still have them. So maybe you're still dealing with bed bugs. Maybe you're dealing with the remnants of an old problem, or maybe it's something completely unrelated.
Sonia from Queens. Hi. You're on the Leonard Lopez Show.
Hi. I have a few things to mention. We've recently been bitten, and they usually come in threes, and that seems to be the case with two members of the family that were bitten, and it was in groups of three, which they call breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And the other thing is it true that kerosene, or is that an old wives' tale, can eradicate it somewhat?
You're the exterminator, Richard Cooper.
Okay. I would absolutely stay away from trying to cure problems with things like kerosene or really any of these home remedies. And, you know, not to promote my industry, but this is, I think Dr. Pollack would agree, one of the few pest problems that really is best handled by a professional for a variety of reasons, not only to increase the likelihood of getting control, but to make sure that you're not exposing yourself to unnecessary risks like you would be if you were to use kerosene as a solution.
So what gets done when an exterminator shows up?
Well, that's going to be pretty much all over the board right now, unfortunately. You know, the simple truth of the matter is that the pest management industry is going through the learning curve just as the rest of the world is. And it's really a matter of finding a company that really understands what they're doing. There should be really a few components. One is extremely detailed inspection. Physical removal and destruction of bugs should play a major role as well.
Can you fumigate your bed, your mattress?
You know, the term fumigation is one that's widely misunderstood. A true fumigation is where a gas vapor is released. This is where the old tent structures, we see this down south a lot for drywood termites. What most people mean when they're talking about fumigation is really nothing more than a fogging, where you release a mist or a fog into the environment. And there's real, well, first of all, that's not going to solve a problem, and it may exacerbate the problem.
What about dry cleaning all your clothes?
Dry cleaning will destroy all the stages, as will laundering in a hot cycle. You have typically a hot cycle will have temperatures of 140 degrees or more, and that will eliminate all stages.
What about the other side, going to a laundromat and using a washing machine that somebody else who had bed bugs used?
Well, we're seeing laundromats becoming infested, and this is going to change, unfortunately, the quality of life in this country. I don't think people realize exactly what's occurring.
Let's go to Gail Brewer from from New York City and the City Council. Hi, Gail.
How are you, Len? Nice to talk to you. I'm the council member for the west side of Manhattan, and it's a pleasure to be on the show talking about this topic. I think we kind of got it started because we have legislation that we introduced last session, and then we will be introducing in the next couple of weeks again, because the City Council ended its session in December and then started again in January. We received a lot of phone calls last year from residents of the West Side concerned about bed bugs, just like many of your listeners. And we introduced legislation because we could see that the city agencies, you know, as terrific as the health department is and housing preservation and development and the buildings department, some of their inspectors were not aware of some of the concerns and weren't sure what to do with them.
Well, what can we do legislation-wise?
Well, we are suggesting that we kind of ban the sale of reconditioned mattresses, and also there's a concern, and we will put language in on ending the transportation of new and used mattresses on the same truck. Now, all of this has to be, you know, part of a hearing process so that exterminators and professionals in the health field and obviously in the mattress field all need to come together to figure out what to do. But I can tell you our phones are ringing off the hook in terms of the numbers of complaints from all economic groups, because, as I'm sure you know, this has nothing to do with clean or dirty apartments. It's just all of us are impacted. And I will also say that the courts are full of these concerns because, you know, not everybody can afford a good exterminator. And unfortunately, some of these buildings don't get exterminated properly. And a lot of tenants are going to court saying, you know, who's going to pay for the dry cleaning? Is it me? Is it the landlord? And, you know, it's an endless numbers of questions that we're receiving.
Well, we thank you for calling us, and I'll be following that legislation. We'll be doing a follow-up with you, I'm sure. Gail Brewer from the City Council. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692, talking about bed bugs on today's Please Explain with Dr. Richard Pollack from Harvard, the Harvard School of Public Health, and Richard Cooper, who is the technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions of New Jersey. And our next caller is Deborah from Manhattan. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Wait, but before we get to you, Deborah, I just want to ask Dr. Pollack, are we seeing that kind of legislation all over the country, or is this something that New York is leading the way on?
Well, actually, hate to say it, but Boston, I think, is leading the way.
Your town.
There already has been movement here. The City of Boston, their Inspectional Services Department, and the Housing Authority have had in place for a while regulations that are meant to help with this situation. And what happens is if a tenant, a resident, contacts them, they send their inspectors, if they find a bed bug problem, they require then that the building owner or landlord contract with a licensed professional pest control company, file a written integrated pest management plan with the city, which clearly outlines what the owner is going to do, what the pest control operator is going to do, what's required of the tenants, the schedule of those activities, so everybody knows what's going to happen and who's responsible for what. Too often, building owners and landlords don't understand the laws and think that they can just go down to the local hardware store, buy an insecticide, and apply something on their own, and that should not happen.
In fact, we got a call from somebody else who wanted to know whether you just spray alcohol. I don't think that would work any better than kerosene,
although
it would be less flammable.
Well, and one other thing is that there already are laws on the books having to do with how mattresses are to be handled. There are federal regulations as to the color of the label on the mattress, of a new mattress versus a used mattress. Many times they have to be sent off to a particular site to be reconditioned where they're stripped down and rebuilt. So it's interesting that these things have almost fallen off the map as well, the regulations. Most people, most of the regulators don't even know about them anymore.
Well, Richard Cooper, the areas that seem to have the biggest problems are the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and India. Why those, do you think?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, you know, I think what we're seeing is certainly also you can add the UK into that. And a lot of these countries, again, we're seeing the parallel between changing practices. Some of the countries are more endemic than others, and some of them are really realizing more of a resurgence like we are.
All the same bed bugs, you think?
Or not all the,
is there a New Zealand version and an Australian version?
Well, as Richard Pollack had mentioned before, there's a number of different related species. And I know in some of the warmer climates, India, Africa, Australia, they're seeing the tropical bed bugs, Simex hemipterus. We're dealing primarily in the United States with one species, and then we do have some related species like bat bugs, but we don't really deal with the tropical bed bug here.
Deborah from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air. Deborah, you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, go ahead.
My question is about the bites. I had bed bugs over the past summer, and the only reason I knew I had them is because my boyfriend was bitten, but I never was. He would get the red welts and the bites, but I was never affected by those.
Is this like mosquitoes, where some people are more attractive to bed bugs than others?
This is Rich Pollack. Yes, indeed. Some people seem to be more attractive to bed bugs. I hope you're not making a complaint that you're not getting bitten. Most people would enjoy it if their boyfriends or spouses would be bitten instead.
Yeah, but is this is that because pheromones attract them as well? Is that the smell? And perhaps his pheromones are more attractive to bed bugs than Deborah's are?
It's absolutely possible.
But we hope the pheromones have also attracted Deborah.
I hope so, but not the bed bugs. No, I'm just asking because he was off. He suffered a lot, and I mean, it was hard to get rid of them, and he was very good about it. But I just never experienced it, so it wasn't as bad for me as as it was for him.
Well, there's also the possibility that you are indeed bitten by bed bugs,
right.
Just you don't notice it. And
that would
be a good thing as well.
Thank you so much for calling us, and good luck. We have very little time left, but I really want to get to the questions I'm sure that everybody wants answers to. How do you can you do things to prevent getting them? And how do you prevent them if your kid goes to a sleepover or goes off to college and comes back? Should you be prepared in advance when they come home?
If I may, there's one other thing I'd like to really get into. I think it's important for all the listeners because there's and then I'll try and quickly address that. One of the big misconceptions, and we hear this, like, can I treat my bed with kerosene? Can I treat my bed with alcohol? There's a big misconception that this problem is isolated to the bed and that by eliminating the bed, discarding the bed, that that's part of the solution. It's important for everyone to realize that this insect disperses out in the surrounding environment, even during the early stages of the infestation. So throwing away the bed or taking actions on your own on the bed isn't a solution. And if you bring in new bedding or new furniture, it's likely to get reinfested. So you really want to, again, not follow a lot of these home remedies because very often you're going to expose yourself in ways that you shouldn't.
Will they also infest your pets?
Well, that's another interesting question. I mean, we know in a laboratory they'll readily feed on rabbits, guinea pigs, mice, rats, and things of that nature. We also know that they'll feed on other mammals and birds. So there's a real question as when they're given a choice. Let's say you have the pet hamster, the pet cat, the pet dog. Are they, in fact, feeding on alternate hosts simultaneously as they're feeding on the human host? Or is it perhaps that they're maybe only resorting to alternate hosts when they're under nutritional stress or possibly under chemical pressure? And again, comes back to that we just simply don't know these types of answers yet.
Richard Pollack, so when we go to a hotel, even a really good one, we can be infested. Our kid can be infested at a sleepover or coming or going to college and staying in a dorm. Is there any protection at all?
Well, a little bit. Yeah, I think that most hotels are not infested and most hotel rooms are not infested. But regardless of the number of stars on the hotel that you visit or if you're staying at somebody's home that you suspect might have a problem, what I generally do is when I walk into a hotel room to stay there, the first thing I will do is I'll put my suitcase down on that tubular metal frame that stays off the floor. I do something which might seem a little erratic to most people, and that's I pull back the covers on the mattress, the sheets, the mattress pad, and I take a look for telltale signs of bed bug activity. I look for bugs or little dark dried spots that would be the dried feces, the blood that's left on the mattress. And I might look elsewhere. Partly this is because bed bugs themselves are valuable to me. I'd be able to collect a few. I would then go down and ask for another room. The other thing I would do would be to leave my suitcase zipped up unless I'm actually putting something in or taking something out. Beyond that, I don't know if there's much you can do. If you suspect you've stayed in a infested room, hotel, motel, or otherwise, it's one thing you could do. You get home, take your suitcase down to the basement if you've got it, empty it out there, immediately wash or dry your clothes on high heat if it won't destroy the clothing, and store the suitcase far, far away from where you sleep.
And Richard Cooper, you have the final word.
I think it's important that everyone realize, you know, we want to avoid mass hysteria. When you start talking about bed bugs, the next thing everyone thinks they have bed bugs and every mark on their body becomes a bed bug. I think it's real important to take into consideration the measures that Dr. Pollack just mentioned. But the one problem is that that people don't always react to the bite, but more often than not, they do. So I think that the key here is that if you are waking up in the morning with bites that clearly weren't there the night before and that this continues to happen on a reoccurring basis, that bed bugs should be one of the first things on your radar screen, that you should have somebody come in that's qualified to do an inspection.
And we thank you both so much for being with us. Richard Cooper, an entomologist and the technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions, New Jersey, and Dr. Richard Pollack, an entomologist and research associate with the Department of Immunology and Infectious Diseases at the Harvard School of Public Health.
Good night, Mr.
Mr. Bedbug, good night. I hope that you sleep tight. I hope that the people don't bite. Good night, Mr. Bedbug, good night.